Live from Southern California, this is the Jim Rome Show.
Clones, TGIF. No, scratch that. TGIPT. Thank God it's Podcast Tuesday. This might be a two-day week, but we did some work. Two great shows. The Jim Rome Podcast dropped this morning with former mob boss Michael Franzese. And now today's Daily Jungle. Pete Carroll chomping that gum last night and making some questionable decisions that have the Seahawks now sitting at 6-4 after Blair Walsh missed that 52-yarder. He left it short. Also, Sean McDermott doubled down on that Nate Peterman experience, and Joel Embiid was at it once again. I love this guy like a son. Find out what Ryan Shazier thinks about the Steelers' defense, what it was like for Martin Truex Jr. to win the NASCAR Cup Championship, and what Ricky Jean-Francois is doing with his money to set himself and his family up for life. All of that and Alvy's two-day week that was, the Daily Jungle starts right now. Let me start by asking Seattle a question. Seattle, how you feeling? How you living? How's everything this morning, Seattle? I ask because last night's game was one gut punch after another. All night long, a blast to the junk. Already playing without Richard Sherman and Cam Chancellor. They lose cornerback Shaquille Griffin two plays into that game, and that was just the start of the pain. Physical pain, emotional pain, because Russell Wilson did this on his second pass attempt.
Wilson under center, second down and one. Here's a line drive pass, and it was picked off on a ricocheting grab by Trufant. Runs from the 30. Far sideline, 40, gets a pocket, the 50. Down the far sideline, makes a move, breaks a tackle, 45. He's on the 40, runs to the far sideline, to the 35-yard line of Seattle. Shocking beginning here in the Pacific Northwest.
Right? Thanks to Westwood One. Shocking beginning. That was on his second pass attempt. Then, Russ did this in the second quarter.
Shotgun snap, he backpedals, he shuffles, he's on the numbers, and he's drawn down from behind. And the ball was jarred loose and picked up by Claiborne. He takes it in, it's a touchdown! Adrian Claiborne vacuumed in that ball as the quarterback Wilson was being spun around, and it was jarred free.
What a brutal combination. And yet somehow they find a way to get back into the game when Wilson finds Doug Baldwin for a 29-yard TD with 3 minutes left. The ensuing two-point conversion made it a three-point game. And somehow the Seahawks were in position to rip it. The 12s were screaming. The link was rocking. And then Sheldon Richardson came knocking.
The shotgun snap. He drops back three. He gets a block from the left tackle. He's sacked! He's sacked! He is sacked! Down at the 17-yard line. Sacked on the play by Sheldon Richardson.
And did dude ever pick a great time for his first sack of the season. And now, not only does Seattle have a chance of ripping it, they've got a damn good chance of ripping it. Only a shoestring tackle from Deion Jones on Russell Wilson's scramble kept Seattle from getting deep into field goal range. But they did give enough. They did get enough to give Blair Walsh a look from 52. Viking fans and Seahawk fans probably both had a good sense, though, of how that was going to go.
You got to remember, just a couple weeks ago in this building, he missed three big kicks against Washington, costing him the win there.
52-yarder for the tie. Good snap. Ball put down. Kick is up. Long enough. End over end. It is. No, it's short. It's short just beneath the crossbar. He misses. 2 seconds to play.
See, that's the thing. It was not long enough. That kick is up. It's long enough. No, it's not. No, it's not. And that's what was so weird. I mean, to be honest, that was weird. Don't get me wrong. I'm not betting, or I wasn't betting that he would make it. But when was the last time you saw an NFL kicker leave a kick inside of 55 yards short? I'm not saying it's a chip shot. Far from it. But these guys absolutely smoked the ball. And they've turned 52-yarders into 42-yarders. If they're going to miss, it's going to be left or right, but never short. And I know the fresh take after that miss was, it's not on Walsh. That if Pete Carroll hadn't called for a fake field goal in the first half or wasted a timeout on a foolish review, that they would have been in a better spot. And I don't completely disagree. The review was bizarre. It was bizarre. And Peter's explanation wasn't any better.
Doug and I have been through this for years, and he's been right a bunch of times. He said he had his arm underneath the football and secured. The ball may have touched the ground, but he knew he had secured it. That's what he said, and I believe him. You know, I trust him.
All right, so that's Pete going, Pete. That's exactly what you'd expect from Pete Carroll after another tough loss and a questionable call by Pete himself. He's just getting ramped up and talking faster and faster and chomping on his gum and talking faster and faster and faster. I mean, I've never seen a guy that old, that hyped after a game. I've never seen a guy that old, that hyped, working his gum as hard as he is, laying out something that happened during a game.
Devin and I've been through this for years, and he's been right a bunch of times. He said he had his arm underneath the football and secured the ball. May have touched the ground, but he knew he had secured it. That's what he said, and I believe him, you know, trust him.
All right, so I love the trust that he has in his guys. This is why Pete Carroll is Pete Carroll, and you're not. That said, maybe you trust your eyes, your own eyes, a little bit more. Maybe you make sure you have somebody in your ear who's saying, "Coach, it hit the ground," because you can't afford to be giving away timeouts like that. And as for the fake field goal, now that was something special.
Ball down at the 25. It'll be a 35-yard field goal try to make it a four-point game. Walsh, oh, it's a fake, and they throw it ahead, and it was caught by the tight end, Luke Wilson, who was immediately tackled, and Atlanta read it well. Atlanta read it well. And now 2 seconds remaining, and Atlanta will take over as they hold him, and they do not get the three-point field goal try.
No,
I'm over
they
here. I'm kind of dumbfounded.
Yeah, I'm kind of dumbfounded, too. I think we were all kind of dumbfounded. Just to recap that very quickly, from the Atlanta 17, Seattle decides to have John Ryan throw a shovel pass to Luke Wilson, who was promptly dumped for a four-yard loss. The problem was not so much that it was fourth down and it resulted in a turnover on downs, which it did, or that they were passing up a great chance for 3 points, which might come in handy later, which they would have. But that you needed your tight end to score from the 17 in order for you not to run out of time, which he didn't. So, what is the explanation for passing on 3 points for a shovel pass from your punter to your tight end in an attempt to get a touchdown?
Would have been a really good call if he made it. You know, it was something we saw we wanted to do. It was a terrific opportunity right where we wanted it, the defensive tackle made a better play, you know, getting backfield. He wasn't supposed to be there.
I mean, what a horrible call. Did he really think that was going to work? Did he really think that made sense? You got 3 points on the board. Not only are you taking those 3 points off the board, but again, you need your punter on a shovel pass to your tight end from the 17 to score to make that work. I mean, Pete, really? Can you explain exactly what you were thinking when you made that call? You ever notice the worse the call, the faster he talks? The bigger the mistake, the faster this guy talks? Yeah, look, I see it working. But by definition, any call
would have been a really good call if he made it.
It would have been a really good call if he made it. That's my favorite part of that. Yeah, but it would have been a really good call if we made it. Yeah, I guess. But then again, any call would be a really good call if it works. If you called a Hail Mary there, it would have been a really good call if it worked. That's how it goes. But, you know, I got to be honest here. I kind of like that call on some level. In fact, if I'm being really honest, I love that call. Not because I thought it was a good call, but because I liked watching it. I love the idea of a shovel pass to the tight end from the punter and seeing if they can make it to the end zone from 17 yards out. Man, that's way more exciting than just taking a 35-yard field goal. Hey, don't get me wrong. If I were a Seattle fan, I'd be pissed because taking that 35-yard field goal gives you 3 more points and it could have changed the entire game. But I'm not paid to root for Seattle. I don't care if they win or lose. I'm not paid to root for anybody, which is why I like the call. Again, don't get it twisted. Don't get me wrong. It's not a good call. In fact, it was a horrible call, but I liked it. In fact, I'd like to see more NFL coaches pass on short field goals for wacky fake field goals. 35-yard field goals are boring. Shovel passes to the tight end are awesome, especially when they don't work. I guess what I'm getting at is this, Seahawk fan. I hate to bring up painful memories, 12s, but it's certainly not the first time that Carroll has made some unorthodox call. And it won't be the last. This is not your run-of-the-mill coach. He's a gum-chomping, fast-talking, riverboat gambler. That's why you have that Super Bowl ring. And that's also why you don't have 2 Super Bowl rings. Did that call cost you the game? Maybe. Did it hurt your playoff chances? Possibly. Probably. But that's the Pete Carroll experience. Enjoy it and embrace it. That's your dude. But you may need some help to get into the playoffs now. I just would not expect it to come from your head coach, because this cat often will roll the bones and come up snake eyes. And he did this time. Just crapped out. Clones, I need a minute so I can talk to you about Stamps.com. Listen, these days, you can get practically everything on demand, such as our podcast. Listen whenever you want, when it's convenient for you. So let me ask you, why are you still going to the post office and dealing with their limited hours when you can get postage on demand with Stamps.com? Anything that you can do at the post office, you can now do right from your desk. As an example, the holidays are coming up. My wife, Janet, is all about the Christmas card. We send out hundreds, literally hundreds of Christmas cards, and there's no way we could do it without Stamps.com. I'm going to print my own postage. I'm going to do it when I want and do it at home. Trust me, with the holidays coming up, you should do the exact same thing, and you'll thank me for it. Go to Stamps.com, hit the microphone at the top of the homepage, and type in jungle. That's Stamps.com. Enter jungle for a special, special offer. A four-week trial, which includes postage and a digital scale. Do not wait. You want to go to Stamps.com, and before you do anything else, hit the microphone at the top of the homepage and type in jungle. That's Stamps.com. Enter jungle. Stamps.com. Never go to the post office ever again. I know I won't. That's Stamps.com. Ryan Shazier is my guest. Ryan, good to have you back. How are you?
Hey, good to be back, Jim. Good to be back.
It's good to have you, Ryan. Thanks for doing it. You beat Tennessee Thursday night, and that's a game where the defense had 5 sacks and 4 interceptions. Tennessee is known for playing a very physical brand of football. So what was your approach, Ryan, going into that game?
One of the things we like to do on our team is also play a physical brand of football, and we know that they're going to try to be pretty physical, so we had to just match their physicality.
You know, at the same time, the offense, Ryan, was explosive. You scored on 4 straight possessions in the second half. Now, I know you're not going to tell me that that was a perfect game, but did that give everybody a look at just how good this team can be on both sides of the ball?
Yeah, it definitely gave everybody a look how our team can be, and that we just have so much to still work on, because our potential is so high, and people don't understand that when we get everything clicking, I don't even think people can touch us.
Well, so you guys are 8-2 right now, and you look so good on both sides of the ball. Like, what can you improve upon?
I know on defense, we gave up a few big plays that we definitely don't want to work on. We definitely want to work on, because some of those big plays can kind of bite you in the butt later on in the season, especially when you're playing really good teams. And then, we have to do a better job of tackling also, because I think we lead the NFL in tackles or something, missed tackles or something like that. But it's a good and bad thing, because we know that guys are running to the ball. But if we do a better job of just tackling in general, some of the plays that people might get negative 3 yards, they turn into 7 yards. That can help us a lot more and put them in tougher situations. And then, on offense, if we do better like they did in the Tennessee game of scoring in the red zone and just capitalizing when we get them the ball, I think that would just take us to the next level.
Steelers linebacker Ryan Shazier joining us. Hey, look, you're always going to be really tough on yourself and on the defense. You're going to be critical. But as a defense, I'm looking at you guys. You have not allowed more than 20 points in a game all season long. So in terms of this unit, how would you describe the attitude and the approach of the defense this year?
Honestly, we all care about each other tremendously. I feel like on our defense, it doesn't matter who makes the play, and we're excited about whoever makes it. At the end of the day, everybody wants to make a play, but if anybody makes it, it doesn't really matter to us who does. We're just happy that the play is being made, and you've seen that we celebrate together as a group and try to just have a good time. And sometimes, other people, they're so worried about themselves or certain people making the plays that everybody's not happy about it or just enthusiasm about their teammates making the plays. And I think that really helps us a lot. And we also hang out a lot on and off the field. I remember right before the Colts game, I had a bunch of guys over, and we were just hanging out, eating chicken, and just talking about football and things that we can do better. And I know a lot of us play the video games together when we're not when we're not at the facility, almost like a college atmosphere type thing. And I think that's really helping us to become a lot closer.
Ryan Shazier joining us. You know, it sounds like one of those great football cliches, right, that if you only play for yourself and not the guy next to you, then it's not going to work. But it's so true. And then I would take it one step further. I mean, you guys pick each other up and play for each other. But what happens when you get a team full of guys that want to make plays, but not only want to make plays and play for each other, but guys who love the game? I mean, really love the game. How big of a difference does that make? Because not everybody loves the game, right, Ryan?
Yeah, you're right. Not everybody loves the game. And when you get a bunch of guys that love the game and willing to put in extra time, they don't have to. I think it really pushes your team to the next level. We have meetings. Sometimes we have little break areas in our days for like brunch and lunch and things like that. And a lot of times guys, instead of, they'll skip their brunch or go hurry up and get some food, and then we'll have a group of guys that watch film together, you know, for an extra 45 minutes when they're supposed to just be having a little break time, you know. And then sometimes guys are getting treatments together when they can just be at home watching TV, or even when we're playing a video game, we're talking about football. It's crazy. But at the end of the day, I think that stuff helps us get better every day, and I think that's really been the catalyst of how we've been so much better on defense.
Steelers linebacker Ryan Shazier joining us. So one more thought about the defense. Every year is different, every unit's different, and you've played on some really good defenses in your time in Pittsburgh. How does this group compare to some of the ones that came before it? Might this be the best defense you've been on?
Personally, I feel like this is the best defense I've been on. The defenses that I've been on before, you know, they had Hall of Famers and guys that's going to have gold jackets and who won Super Bowls. But honestly, I feel like this is the best defense I've ever been on, college, pro, and high school. You know, I feel like everybody over here can make a play. We know, everybody knows their responsibility. If somebody messes up or something happens, we all know exactly who messed up, exactly what happened, and then we'll ask them, like, hey, why you didn't make that play? Because we expect everybody to make a play. And we expect when certain players come your way, we telling them, hey, this play is coming, this play is coming, this play is coming. So if we're telling you something's coming and you over here don't take advantage of your opportunity, then we're on top of you. You know what I'm saying? I think that's really what helps us. And our understanding of the defense is just so much above what it was when I was a rookie. I could definitely say that I probably was part of that because, you know, I started as a rookie, as an inside linebacker, and helping making calls. And we had a veteran defense, but at the end of the day, when you have such a young guy in there trying to control the offense, you know they have to control the type of control the plays they put in and control how much they put in. And I don't know if it was me that was holding us back or not, but I know that the understanding of this defense with all the young guys that we have now is way above what it was when I played the first few years.
Ryan Shazier, my guest. You know, I don't think that's unusual. I think for everybody coming in, it's going to take some time, right, to figure out exactly what's going on. Like, Ryan, you play so fast. What happened when the game started to slow down? Like, when you first started, did the game seem like it was going as fast as you were running? And then what happened when it started to gradually slow down for you?
Oh, yeah, the game was definitely super fast to me. But I definitely, it started to slow down. You know, every time I started feeling pretty good, started doing pretty good, the game would slow down. And then, unfortunately, I would have something like an injury or something that would hold me back and then speed back up. But now that I've just been able to stay focused, stay healthy, stay on top of my treatment, stay on top of the way I eat, I feel like I've been able just to stay on the route, the plan, and I feel like it's really been helping me take control of the game.
Yeah, I'm always fascinated by how you guys eat. So what did you change about your diet, and has it made a difference on the field for you?
One of the things that I changed about my diet is I'm almost on like a paleo-type diet.
Right.
But I'm allergic to seafood and nuts. So I'm on like a super paleo like diet, but it's more for me because some people on paleo can eat seafood and nuts and those type of things. But I just can only eat basically meat and veggies, and then I eat some fruit. But I'm really doing a really good job of that. You know, every now and then, sometimes people cheat. You know, I might get a Chick-fil-A sandwich here and there. But other than that, I've been doing a really good job of just staying really heavy on my diet, and I think it's really been making me feel a lot better than just been feeling healthier and having more air and energy when I'm playing.
So in other words, paleo is like, if it comes out of the ground, it's okay. As long as it's not in a box, it's okay. As long as it's not processed, like that kind of thing?
Yeah, as long as it's not processed, as long as it's not coming out of a box, it's pretty much good for you. You know, if it's 100% organic, grass-fed type of food, you know, the healthiest form that used to be nothing with any steroids or anything like that. Almost, if you can get it from a farmer's market, as healthy as you can get, that's pretty much how I try to eat.
Ryan Shazier joins us for another moment or so. Look, I know you've got your business at hand and you're worried about your team. What about your other team? Where are you watching Ohio State, Michigan this weekend? How do you feel about that matchup this year?
Yeah, I'm definitely going to be watching that one at the house, you know, with my family. I'm going to be watching a little bit with my team, but I'm going to be watching most of it at the house. You know, I have to make sure we blow those guys out. I got to tune in because, you know, that'll give us a chance to get back into the playoffs. So, and I know it's a tough rivalry. It is every year, you know, but at the end of the day, we got to take care of business so we can get a shot to get back in the playoffs. You know, we slipped up a few games and it really hurt us. And I know those guys definitely want a shot back at Baker. So I know they're going to take care of business so they can try to get back in the playoffs.
Hey, Ryan, I know it's apples and oranges, but, like, what was it like being in the middle of that rivalry? And would that rivalry compare in any way to the biggest ones you've had in the NFL, like Ohio State, Michigan? Is that on par with Pittsburgh, Baltimore?
I feel like the rivalry Pittsburgh, Baltimore is a really big rivalry. And, you know, the Ohio State, Michigan rivalry, that's crazy. The fans are getting mad at me right now because I even said the word Michigan. You know, normally you got to say team up north. They don't even like they right. Cross out all the M's in the city, and it's crazy because you know they hate that team up there. But it's the same here. They hate Baltimore just as much. But you know, in the college rivalries, I think the Ohio State Michigan might be a little bit above the Baltimore Pittsburgh, but I promise you it's not that far off. And it doesn't matter what the records are or what you're ranking or anything like that. With both of those rivalries, whenever you're playing, it's 0-0, and everybody's going out there playing the best they can.
Yeah, I think the one thing you can say about both those rivalries, whatever you want to say, it's deeply personal. No matter what goes on, it's deeply personal every single year. Last thought, I saw you post on Instagram that you were at the Philadelphia 76ers game the other day. After all the years of them losing, what was the atmosphere like in the arena, and then how does that team look to you right now?
Honestly, the atmosphere in that arena was crazy. You know, honestly, I haven't been to a lot of 76ers games. I think that was honestly my first one. That was my first 76ers game. But I was actually talking to fans and people that have been to them before, and they were telling me, hey, man, the stadium used to have nobody in it. The arena used to have nobody in it, but it was a packed crowd. You know, they was doing really good at the beginning of the game versus the Warriors, and I think they're going to be a really good team in the future. You know, they have a lot of young guys. You know, Joel, he's a dominant force in at the center, and Ben Simmons, man, I think he's next up, man. He has so many attributes as a player. He's just crazy because he can really control the pace of the game, and I think he really controlled the flow of the offense. And I think they're gonna be a great team, and it was amazing energy in the amazing energy in the arena when we went.
All right, so let's talk about Buffalo for a minute. If you thought that first-year head coach Sean McDermott would double down on what proved to be a truly awful decision to start Nate Peterman over Tyrod Taylor, then you'd be wrong. Double back, I should say. Double back. If you thought he'd double back, I mean, this guy is doubling down. You'd think for sure the shell shock of watching a fifth-rounder throw five first-half picks would have worn off with a good night of sleep. Especially if he napped it out on a Casper. Believe me, he would have forgotten the whole thing. Apparently not. That's one for me. No, he didn't, though. Because yesterday, McDermott rolled out of the rack and he spit some nonsense about what the hell happened Sunday on the pitch here in Cali.
Well, let me start off here with Nathan. You know, one game is not going to define Nathan or Nathan's career.
Yeah, you want to bet? You want to bet, coach? Something tells me completing five passes to the other team in one half of football might just define Nathan and his career. Because that's an incredible effort that the whole world saw a couple of days ago. And it's an incredible effort that the whole world is still talking about 2 days later. Listen, I'm not here rooting for the kid to be forever known as the five interceptions in one half guy. But I'm here to say he'll probably be forever known as the five interceptions in one half guy. And I think McDermott knows that too. And that's the biggest reason that he's saying otherwise. Because he was the one who grabbed Peterman by the shirt and tossed him into a pit of starving lions. What else you got, Coach?
I own the decision. And I still, as I said yesterday, I don't regret the decision. I regret the result. And there's other hands also in the result. So it's never about one player.
That's true. I agree with that. There were other hands. Like every other hand on the Chargers defense. And you're right, once again, it was not about one player. It's not about one player. It was about four players. Chargers corner, Casey Hayward. Chargers linebacker, Corey Toomer. Chargers safety, Trey Boston. Chargers corner, Trevor Williams. Those were the other players who did your guy for five picks in the first half. So you're right, it's not about one player. What else you got, Coach? You going to keep going?
There were some plays yesterday I know he wants back.
There are some plays he wants back. Yeah, right. Those five very specific plays where he threw it to the other team. Hey, Coach, you know what? He doesn't want plays back. He wants his life back. He wants a time machine. He wants the DeLorean. He wants to go back to Saturday night and to fake a stomach flu so nobody would know who the guy is right now. He doesn't want plays back. He wants his anonymity back. But keep going. Keep going. You're owning the dais.
There were positives in there. And, so there was growth. There's growth for our football team.
Growth. Growth. What you'd call growth, the rest of us would call an embarrassing curb stomping in a miniature soccer stadium. Now, look, I'm not in that locker room, but I'd be hard-pressed to believe that anybody was growing after that wax job. But nice try. Nice try on that spin job. Please tell me you have even more.
As a decision maker, when you waver is when you get yourself in trouble.
That's rich. That's rich. You mean like when you wavered on Tyrod Taylor? Like when you said that you were not going to change quarterbacks, and then 48 hours later, you changed quarterbacks? And that got you into real trouble on Sunday. You mean like that? Truer words have never been spoken, my man. You get yourself in trouble when you waver. That's exactly what you did. I can't tell what's worse. The five picks that Nate Peterman tossed or those five cuts that I just tossed too. Hey, look, I'm not into armchair quarterbacking and going back and killing a coach for doing what he thought was best. Sean McDermott did what he thought was best. And it turned out he was dead wrong. And it cost his team a huge game. And the entire city of Buffalo has him on top of the hit list. But what's done is done. Time to turn the page. Except he's not doing that. He seems to be verbally laying the path to somehow start Nate Peterman again, which would be insane, especially since the AFC has been straight garbage this year, and the Bills, despite that beatdown, are still very much alive. They're still in the thing with a three-game losing streak. If he truly is serious about winning right now and being better than a five-win team at this point, like he said, then he's got to throw the keys back to Tyrod Taylor. If he's not serious about winning right now, and he's hell-bent on running the longest postseason drought in sports history up another year, then he's going to put Peterman out there at Arrowhead this weekend under center. I don't know, Mafia. I would not feel any better about that after hearing all that. Martin Truex Jr. is my guest. Martin, great to have you on the show. How are you?
I'm doing great, Jim. Thanks for having me on.
Martin, great to have you on. It's less than 48 hours since you won your first Monster Energy NASCAR Cup Series championship. I've got to ask, what have the last 2 days been like? Has it sunk in yet?
It's been kind of crazy. It hasn't really sunk in yet. I still feel like, at some point I'm going to wake up and be back to reality. But, super proud, and it's been a crazy 48 hours, to say the least.
I mean, you did it. You reached the pinnacle of the sport. Does it feel the way that you thought it would?
I think it feels better than I thought it would, to be honest. The emotion, just having so many friends and family at the racetrack this weekend, and, the story of our team over the past four seasons, the story of just so many ups and downs throughout my career, all those things just made it such an emotional win. And made it kind of a tough one to handle, but definitely an unbelievable week and one I'll remember for the rest of my life, and it's just unbelievable.
You know, I get that, and I think a lot of the fans who know your story and your background do as well, and I'll get to that in a minute. But you led 78 laps on Sunday, including the final 51, but Kyle Busch was trying to run you down. You said that with 20 laps to go, you weren't sure that you were going to win. What were you thinking at that point in the race?
Just trying to find something on the racetrack. You know, honestly, we were really fast on the shorter runs, newer tires, and it seemed like as those tires would wear out and get older, the 18, the 4 car, they both were faster than us, I felt like, on the longer runs. So we had 37 laps to go when I took the green flag on the last set of tires. Got to about, you know, 20 or 18 to go. The 18 got to second, started running me down fast, and my tires were gone. My car was handling bad, and I'm like, I got to find something on the racetrack. I got to find a place I can run that I can not only slow him down but make my car go a little bit faster. So I don't know how I found it, because I looked all over that racetrack all day long searching for some speed and some grip, and I found it. It was a little strip up in turns 3 and 4 that was probably 2 or 3 inches wide, and I just found it, and then I was like, okay, keep hitting these marks and don't screw up, and was able to hold him off.
Martin Truex Jr. joining us. He's the driver of the number 78 Toyota Camry for Furniture Row Racing. The fact of the matter is, you drove the final 20 laps on Sunday like a champion, to become a champion. But at one point after you won, you said, quote, I was a wreck thinking about all the tough days, the bad days, the times where I thought my career was over, the times when I didn't think that anybody believed in me, but the guys who mattered did, my fans, my family, and then when I got with this team, end quote. So is there any way to put into words the emotions that you were feeling, having given what you've gone through to win the way you did?
I really can't explain it. I've never felt like that before. I've never just been in that situation where I couldn't control my emotions and just broke down. You know, I mean, I went from taking the white flag of, you know, knowing and saying to myself, you got this. I mean, these guys are done. It's over. Game over, you know, just put them away, to literally 30 seconds later coming around to take the checkered flag. And I literally just, I lost it. I couldn't talk. I couldn't do anything. I mean, I was just crying like a baby. I mean, it was the craziest feeling I'd ever felt. And all those things flashed through my mind of all the, you know, all the things we've been through and all the people that helped get me here throughout the years. And just the story of my racing career, the whole thing flashed in front of me. It was the most amazing feeling. I don't even know how to explain it.
You know, of course, Martin, a lot of people know that your longtime girlfriend, Sherry, has been battling ovarian cancer for 3 years. She missed some of the playoff races as she underwent chemotherapy. Mm-hmm. What did it mean to have her there at Homestead and to share the whole journey and experience with her?
It was unbelievably special. You know, I mean, we've been together for so long. We've been through so much together. You know, the last couple of years have been difficult for her at times. I've learned so much from her battle that's helped me get through racing problems and things in racing and just continue to fight my butt off to get to where I want to go. And, you know, so to have her there and, you know, be in between treatments and feeling really good and things going really well, just to be able to celebrate together the victory and just celebrate being able to overcome so many things in our lives together was one of the most special things about the whole deal.
It's incredible. Martin Truex Jr. joining us. And then on top of that, the Furniture Row team owner, Barney Visser, suffered a heart attack earlier this month. He was not supposed to watch the race out of caution for his heart health, but the team manager was texting him updates. What has the Furniture Row team meant to you? And then how much pride do you take in the fact that this team from Denver was able to beat all the teams from the Carolinas?
Well, all the above. I mean, just we're definitely proud to do it a different way. And Barney Visser, our owner, who, you know, had the heart attack, couldn't be there. That was a lot of inspiration for us to go out and get it done. But, you know, I think that it goes way deeper than that. And the team that he's built, the work ethic, the family atmosphere that he's built around this team and instilled into this group of guys, we're truly a huge family. And I've never been with worked with a group of people this large that get along and respect each other and drive each other to work harder and be smarter and do a better job in that kind of way than this group. And so it really all goes back to Barney. what he started, being from Denver, doing it a different way, that pride of doing it different than other teams. And, you know, people said it couldn't be done when he started this team 11 or 12 years ago. So all those things, I mean, just added to it, added to the emotion, added to just how big of a deal this is. And, you know, a proud day for all of us and unbelievable.
Yeah, Martin, on top of all that, there might be people listening that aren't as clued into the sport. They don't know exactly what we're talking about here. I mean, if you go back 4 years, you found out that you were not going to have a sponsor for the following season and have talked about how there was a night when you were sitting on your porch thinking that you might never get a chance to race competitively in the Cup Series again. So what was that challenging time like for you, and then how were you able to keep the faith and keep moving on?
Oh, it was a huge challenge, to be honest. I mean, I didn't know what was going to happen. And, you know, that's when Sherry said to me, you know, things happen for a reason. Just, you know, it's going to work out. Don't worry. Just keep doing, you know, what you know how to do. Fight your butt off. And, you know, I think it was a week later or 7 days later, 8 days later, I got a call from Furnace Row Racing. And I guess it was fate. I guess it was meant to be after all, because, you know, here we are today together, Furnace Row Racing, doing what we did. So as bad as that time was, and as bad of a position that I thought I was in, you know, after all, it turns out, well, maybe it was the best thing that ever happened to me.
Martin Truex Jr. joining us for another moment or so. He is the champ. Now, during the celebration on Sunday, Dale Jr. and his wife Amy came over to congratulate you. Knowing the relationship that the two of you have, what did that moment mean to you?
Just special, and, you know, thankful that to have such great friends. And, you know, Dale's like a brother to me, and he's meant so much to my career. Obviously, really in one of the people responsible for really starting it, and you know, my professional career, at least that is. And, you know, for our championship and his final race behind the wheel, you know, as a full time driver, to be interconnected forever is a really neat thing, I think, for both of us. And you know, just so proud of him and what he's done and his legacy and what he's meant to the sport and what he's done for me. And just meant a lot to see him and to see his emotions and his excitement, and, you know, just genuinely happy for us and our team. And, you know, that's what it's all about. That's what, you know, that's what life's about. And, you know, having great friends like that is, you know, just unbelievable, and one of the greatest parts of racing, to be able to meet guys like him.
You know, finally, when I ask you this, you'll probably think, hey, can I enjoy this thing for a moment or two before you ask me about next year? But I know that you're not planning to be a one-and-done guy when it comes to being a champion. This was not something that happened overnight. You're not looking to give it up overnight. So how do you go about preparing to defend the title next year?
Well, we're definitely going to take a week or so at least to let this one soak
sure.
in and enjoy it. But you're right. I mean, our offseason is so short. You know, it's going to be back to work and back to the grind in no time. So, you know, I think for us as a team, this is our fourth year together. Each year we've continued to grow, continued to, you know, up our numbers and our consistency and our race win numbers, and just everything we've done, we've got better every single year in every area, in every category. So, I mean, I think for us, we look to step that up again. We look to, you know, sky's the limit. You know, we need to do better and get after it.
All right, now I'm ready. Go ahead. What do you got? Welcome to the jungle. A tremendous Monday to you. My name is Jim Rome. What's up? I'm Jim Rome. Great to have you here. It is a short week. Let me just be very upfront about that. So get yourself together. Why don't we start with the Sunday night matchup?
Yeah! Under pressure, the ball jarred loose. That's a fumble. Hello, scooped up on the play.
If you want drama, Jerry is your man. If you want winning football teams, look elsewhere. And if you expect that to change, then that's on you, not on Jerry. He ain't changing. And if he's not, they're probably not.
We're horrible.
Ike Taylor.
Like, Rome, you've been in this game for so long, man. I ain't going to say it's easy for you, but this like second nature for you. Like, doing TV, doing radio, doing podcasts, it's easy for you. That's just how it was for me with football. Football go in. With you, Rome, you can do this to whenever you want to retire.
Peterman rolls right, fires short, off the hands of DeMarco, intercepted.
Flings the only way things could have gone worse for Nathan Peterman is if he died on the field.
I don't regret my decision. I regret the result.
The only thing worse than making the worst decision of the year by any coach in the league is refusing to own it. And the quicker you do, the better chance you have keeping that part of the locker room that you have not already lost.
Coach always says, we never lose, we learn.
Hi-oh!
Casey Hayward is my guest.
So we like, they got a new quarterback coming in. Is he a rookie against a really good defense? We felt like, I don't know if they want to do this. That's especially in my head. Like, yo, you know, that's a little disrespectful to start them against us.
Nice to have you, Ron. What's up?
What's going on, Romy? How are you doing?
Good, good. How about you?
I'm doing great, actually.
The fact that I just came to you as Ron when your name is Ryan and you didn't correct me that time. Ron, you made it in under the wire.
It's actually Ryan.
It's not Ron, it's Ryan. You get yourself a golden ticket. I know that I'm Ron from now on. Yeah, what the hell? I'll just go with it.
What is that? Three interceptions on the day for Brett Hundley.
Eric Weddle.
Rome, my man.
How do you go about celebrating a shutout win?
So I had cookies and cream ice cream with crunched up white chocolate Kit Kat mini. Then I got home and I had homemade brownies.
I don't say this lightly. You are the best.
No, I appreciate you saying that, Michael.
How many interviews I've had. Some of them are so stiff, and some of them I have to lead them, and they don't even know what to say or what they. I don't know what I'm doing there.
Walsh, oh, it's a fake.
Would have been a really good call for me.
Yeah, I guess. But then again, any call would be a really good call if it works. If you called a Hail Mary there, it would have been a really good call if it worked.
Kind of dumbfounded.
Ryan Shazier is my guest.
So I'll say Michigan rivalry. That's crazy. The fans will get mad at me right now. Because I even said the word. Normally, you got to say team up north. They don't even like, they cross out all the M's in the city, and it's crazy.
There were some plays yesterday I know he wants back.
Hey, Coach, you know what? He doesn't want plays back. He wants the DeLorean. He wants to go back to Saturday night and to fake a stomach flu so nobody would know who the guy is right now. Why are you even walking in here? Since when are you walking here, Sparrow? Nothing. What are you doing? Nothing. You got going for the weekend? Nothing. Martin Truex Jr. joining us. Is there any way to put into words the emotions that you were feeling? You
know, I mean, I went from taking the white flag, saying to myself, I mean, these guys are done. It's over, you know, to literally, I lost it. I couldn't talk. I couldn't do anything. Crying like a baby.
Ricky Jean-Francois, 30, Dunkin' Donuts franchises.
I didn't do the Dunkin' Donuts for just retirement for myself. I was doing it more for my son. Quite been a Dunkin' Donuts business forever.
Donuts.
This dude has more plastic on his grill than a cheap car.
So this show comes back, and it's going to be on TV starting January 2nd. Make note of that. Taciturn. Oh, yeah, that is a strong word.
Spiked up.
Anytime, Rome. Thanks for having me.
He's sacked!
Would have been a really good call for me.
I regret the result.
Goofball from Buffalo.
Thanks for having me on, Rome.
Game over.
But nothing happened, so that was good.
Don't play this. Please.
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 Please. Please.
Good night now!
Please. Ricky Jean-Francois joins us. Ricky, it's good to have you back. How are you?
Good to be back. I'm feeling great. How about you?
Man, I'm great. It's really good to hear your voice. Now, you're coming off a win over the Raiders in Mexico City, so let me just jump right into it. If we go back a minute, though, you were joined, or you did join the Patriots in Week 10 ahead of that trip to Denver. When the opportunity came up to sign with the Patriots, what was your reaction?
It was a blessing that the New England Patriots seen me and see if I can help the program in some which way or fashion. And just to get that call just after being released from the Packers, it was great. I just came in, I'm trying to still learn a new playbook and, you know, trying to be a part of the team, still trying to learn my guys out, pick everybody's brain that's within the building because it's an interesting team. And I know a lot of guys on the team that can help me out mentally and physically and on and off the field.
Ricky Jean-Francois joining us. You mentioned the playbook. I mean, it's tough enough, right, to join a team midseason. But in doing so, you got to pick up a new playbook. And you've said, quote, the playbook is my best friend right now. It's my wife. It's my girlfriend. That's my everything, quote, unquote. So how tricky is it to learn a new playbook in the middle of the season? And how is life with your new best friend?
It feels like trying to learn another language, a very difficult language, but not really too much difficulty. It's just I have to learn new verbiage, new techniques, and things of that nature. But I haven't been around the league long enough. Football is football. Nothing really changed. You just got to get used to hearing terminology when things happen and everything. But me and my best friend, we're doing well. You know, we got the Dolphins up this week, so I can only imagine what's going to be in there. So it's always a challenge and there's always a prize, but the only thing it does is make me better.
Ricky Jean-Francois joining us. Well, I'm glad that you and your new best friend are getting along. In the meantime, we don't, as fans, we don't think about this, but logistically, there are so many different things going on when you do what you're doing. For instance, after the team beat the Broncos in Denver, you spent a week in Colorado Springs before going to Mexico City, and you're probably just trying to get used to it and get acclimated. What was the time in Colorado Springs like?
It was fun. It was interesting. It was challenging to help us get a win in Denver. And then just training to get ready for Mexico. But it was good being up there. We hung out at the Air Force Base. We used their facilities. We was up in, I think, 7,200 feet elevation. And it was interesting. It actually helped us. It made us better. It made us train harder. It made us feel like how far we can push ourselves. But even though some of the Olympic athletes are up there training, and I see why. All it do is make you become better and show you how far is your limits.
Now, what about your new home? I mean, we run down all this travel, and then you go to Mexico City, but what about the last couple of weeks? I mean, do you even have a place to live in New England yet, or is that still a work in progress?
Man, that's still a work in progress. I've never been through this process before, but it's not hard. It's something challenging. It's something that I can focus on trying to find a new place, trying to get myself up here. It's just so many different things, and plus at the same time, you got to balance the place, but you got to balance being in meetings, doing everything. But that's a part of that in itself. This is the part when you walk away from the game that you're going to love and miss.
So what happens when you walk into a new locker room? As an example, you used to go up against the Patriots when you were with the Colts. So what was it like to walk in that locker room for the first time?
It was cool. I said the same thing to myself. I was like, I had a battle against these guys 9 years of my career. Now I'm a part of the team. I was like, you got to be something special because the Patriots don't just bring in anybody. They just bring people in just to watch. They bring people in and they feel they can help the organization. And I was like I said, it was a blessing for me to be one of those chosen people to say throughout my career, I got a chance to play with the New England Patriots. But for right now, I just got my head down and just trying to keep it around and move forward.
You see, that's really interesting, right? They will not bring in just anybody. They'll bring in a certain player because they've got a certain way, and everybody knows about that certain way, the Patriot way. How would you describe how the team and the organization goes about doing its thing? I mean, is it – yeah, I've been there that long, but does it feel different from other organizations that you've played for?
Yeah, because here you work, you grind, you prepare. It's so many things that – we talk about when we're on different teams, but when you actually come to a team that's thinking about what you've been talking about throughout your career, is really different. But now that I'm in an organization like this and doing everything, taking care of your nutrition, doing like so many things that you got to do before you be in the game, it's putting more in your mind. It's feeding your mind more, and it's just making you better as a player. So to get this opportunity and be able to go through things like that and always, each and every day you come in this building and your mind's being challenged, only thing it can do is make you better. And you see why the Patriots are the way they are. And they just get each other better each and every other day.
There's the Patriot way. Now, Ricky, I would argue that there are a lot of teams and communities where you'd be a very good fit, but I'm not sure there's a better fit for you than New England, since it is the home of Dunkin' Donuts and you are the proud owner of 30 Dunkin' Donuts franchises. How is life in the donut game these days?
Life is going great for the Dunkin' Donuts business and, of course, myself. But even the real estate business is even doing better. Just being able to sit on real estate at the same time, just in case anybody else wanted to come in and, you know, shoot me a deal and ask me how much this and this, so on and so on. But it's a blessing. But like I said, sometimes I didn't do the Dunkin' Donuts for just retirement for myself. I was doing it more for my son, because when I walk away from the game, I want him to be able to say my dad did all this and set things up to make sure they take care of me, so he can just keep passing along. You don't know. You might be in a Dunkin' Donut business forever.
Yeah, I love that. In fact, you answered my next question. I was going to say that I know how people out here in SoCal are about Dunkin' Donuts and the loyalty that they have. And I was going to ask you what led you to invest, but you're telling me, right? Like, you want to have something after football, but more importantly, you want to have something to pass on to your son?
Yes, I want him to have some. I want him to be able to look back and be like, my dad worked his butt off by playing football, but at the same time, he thought about me by playing together to make sure I'm set. So I really didn't have to do that. All I have to do is just sit back and you know, raise my son or kids that will be hopefully throughout when I leave the league, but it'll take care of them. And I can just sit there and just see them flourish and see them work the same way I did.
All right, so if the donuts are for your son, who's the real estate for? And what kind of real estate are we talking about? Commercial real estate, some other kind of real estate? What's that play like?
Basically commercial real estate, all the places that I put all the Dunkin' Donuts on. I haven't took over every last one of those places, not a store each one, because a lot of the guys, a lot of my partners were telling me, like, don't go and just rush to put them on there. Somebody may want to put a shopping mall there. Somebody might want to put a strip mall there. But you can only just imagine what type of deals you get and what type of money is offered just to buy real estate from you, especially in these days and in the way the economy is running now.
So, Ricky, what's more of a rush, winning a big football game or getting a good deal done in real estate?
I'm going to say right now we're winning a big game. I'm going to say that right. When I get out, that'll be a different answer. But right now, I'm here winning a big game.
I see it working. Listen, you mentioned your partners. How about this? Not only are you in the home of Dunkin' Donuts, but you're sharing a locker room with Rob Gronkowski, who is a spokesman for the brand. How do you feel about Gronk repping you and pushing donuts, and is he doing a good job?
He's doing a wonderful job. I saw him the other day when I think he was doing interviews. I was like, every time I see you on the TV, I smile because I know people are going out there and buying donuts and looking at your beautiful smile each and every day when you're on that commercial, even with Odell Beckham, a fellow LSU player. I'm happy that guys in this sport can be spokesmen. They can get in to different ventures and things like that. You don't know what it may lead to 10, 20, 30 years down the line, but I'm blessed to be in the same locker room with one of the spokesmen of Dunkin' Donuts, and I'm happy that he keeps doing commercials because all it's doing is helping both of us at the end.
You know, Ricky, the key thing here is, I mean, you're planning ahead. I talked to Ike Taylor about this. Ike and I talk about this a lot. He made it very clear you just never know when the end is coming. Like, guys think, oh, man, I've got plenty of football left. I've got 3 years. I've got 5 years. I've got 7 years. You don't know that, and you've already planned for a life off of the football field. What inspired you to do so? When did you first get that idea that I should be planning ahead?
When I was in San Francisco and I was hanging around a lot of guys, and I was hanging a lot of guys in the tail end of their career and just sitting down talking to guys like Isaac Bruce, Nate Clemens, Dre Blythe, Justin Smith, because a lot of those guys even said it, like, you know, he was coming close to the end. They just made sure they had all their things lined up to make sure they had their business, the cyber plan, everything lined up so when they got out of the league, they can still live a normal life. And probably still make the same pay they was making while they was in the league because they thought ahead of time. And I want to be able to do the same. I still want to be able to make the same pay. I still want to live comfortable. I still want to be able to do anything I want to, basically financial freedom. And the only way you can do that, you got to start setting yourself up real early. And I started doing that. My biggest thing is I don't ask guys for autographs, jerseys, and all that. All I want to do is ask for what's in your mind because something in your mind is going to be able to help you. Might not be everything, but it's something in your head that's going to help me with what I'm doing, either as a person or as a businessman.
Ricky Jean-Francois, my guest. Last thought. There's no way I let you go without talking about your sneaker collection, which has included gems like Oregon 5s, Nike Mags, South Beach 8s. How is the collection going these days? And have you added anything new that you're proud of?
I just added the new Air Jordan 1, the Jumpman. I think all these shoes that are coming out now, I'm grabbing a lot of those right now. But I really slowed down because I really have everything. But I'm still digging out there to keep finding a rare thing. I just caught the Michigan 5, the Fab 5.
Nice.
But I'm probably never going to wear those unless it's a dry day, no rain, and I got to make sure I got to check the forecast a week ahead of time to make sure that these shoes don't get messed up at all.
So what would you break those out for? What kind of experience or what kind of opportunity? When do you wear a pair like that?
It got to be something big. I don't really know. It has to be something just a real big, ridiculous event because a lot of people, sometimes people don't really pay attention to your shoes, but you have different types of guys that really does pay attention to shoes and sneakers, and it can tell a lot just by your kick game. And sometimes I'm kind of off because I don't want to really wear all my kicks, but when it's time to come out and it's a big, big event, and I don't know what type of event that may be, I'm going to make sure you see those Fab Fives on my feet.
That's it, clones. Two down, none to go. I hope you have a tremendous Thanksgiving holiday, and I hope you listen to the Jim Rome podcast with Michael Franzese. It's epic. I'll see you right back here on Monday. I'm out.